Listen, I hate being the guy. I shouldn't even say I hate being the guy. I hate the person who's always like, summer's over the second August 1st rolls around.
Feel that chill in the air?
Yeah. But I'm starting to cherish the summer weekends now a little differently, you know?
Start to enjoy them a little more.
All of a sudden, if somebody's asking me to, like Joe, no offense to Joe.
What?
But Joe's like, guys, I'd like to have you over for a barbecue at my place, and I'd like to do it the second last weekend of the summer. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Like, to be Joe, fair, I said anytime it works.
Yeah, so. I know. Joe's like, guys, Friday night barbecue at my parents' house in Oakville.
I was trying to be nice.
I know. He's like, do you want to have this be the last social event of your summer?
No. I was going to cook for you guys free.
Hey, you know what's better than you cooking for the guys?
What?
A lady doing it. You know, a lady friend,
a cute girl.
I'm
a pretty good cook.
What
would be on the menu? You know what? We don't have time for
Here's the thing would be on the menu.
I made
for my entire family this weekend when I went home to the Valley.
What'd you make?
I just barbecued.
Yeah.
It's not like, I like how you're like, I'm a cook. It's, yeah, okay. First of all, it's all about what you actually marinate it with, right?
Yeah, true.
And then making sure you have one rule with the barbecue. Don't leave it too
burn
long.
It.
Yeah.
I wasn't even planning to use the
don't
barbecue.
Leave it too long. Keep looking it.
No, I was planning to slow cook ribs. Some mashed potatoes, some cornbread.
Oh, you're really trying to impress the people. Yeah.
I'll come.
No, fully, that's what that was my plan.
Do you really think the 22-year-old, 23-year-old, sorry, Joe, sorry.
I don't know. At a formative time, he was locked inside during the pandemic. Maybe got into cooking.
Joe, I was talking about you, actually, the other day with a lady.
This could be good or bad.
No, it was all right. I was like, because I said I love my little Jobo, you know, he's my little guy. Yeah. He's my special little dude.
Your son.
But I was just saying how... Man, it's so crazy to me that you're the most fascinating pandemic person in terms of age group, where you guys got robbed of what was essentially the number one, you're never in the house, you're never doing anything serious party time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a lot of us anyways, where it's like,
I got first
you're
year,
17 to 21, you know, like you do not care. That is your prime, I'll jump off the roof time.
Mm-hmm. You think I can make that?
Yeah, exactly. If we collected all the videos on the internet where you go, ooh, 17 to 21 age is all of those videos.
Yeah, it was that's like 19, 20, 21 is when I was
inside. That's what I'm saying.
So I did work in kitchens for a number of years, though, which is where I picked up a lot of the stuff that
I worked in kitchens. Don't make it sound like you're on the Bear. You were cleaning dishes.
I was in the dish pit when I was 16. I will say that.
The dish pit.
When I was 16.
I should have left you there.
I love the boys in the dish pit. Shout out to the guys.
I
missed you guys. It's been too long since we've had everybody on the show. It's summer months. Everybody's kind of around doing their own thing. Yeah, I got home this weekend. That was nice. Just kind of, soaked in a little bit of the end of summer. Mm-hmm. And I love when you're throwing the Blue Jays game on, no sound. And doing stuff.
Mm.
And it's so not, that's what I'll miss about true summer, where you just have the game on and you're like, what's happening?
Yeah, checking in every now and then.
Fifth inning?
Oh, cool. Okay. And actually, yesterday was really nice, minus the fact that I bet the under. I thought, no way. 9.5? I thought it was crazy. I was like, this is a crazy number. It's one of my favorite ones in the last 2 weeks. Bang, 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 bang.
Jays had nine runs.
Jays were like, we're the hardest hitting home run team in the major leagues.
Brandon Belt.
I actually saw some national baseball people tweeting like, the Jays already have this many home runs and it's only the fourth inning or the fifth inning. And I was like, yeah, okay. So this is the first time you've seen the Jays? this has been a little while since you saw them. No, but yesterday was awesome, right? Like, how fun is it seeing a team get hot offensively? Boy, it was pretty sweet. And, okay, I'm not saying one thing has anything to do with it. I think that for the most part, it was just Jays had a good approach against Hunter Green, and he was coming off of being away. Wasn't exactly his best stuff yesterday. Jays capitalized on a guy that was struggling to find himself and had a good day at the plate. Awesome, you know? Mm-hmm. Awesome, awesome day. All the credit to them. But I'm reading a little bit into the Bo Fearless comments. And I'm kind of curious, do you have it, Austin? I didn't ask you to get it. You do? Yeah. Just run Bo Bichette. This was after the second game of the series, right? Yeah, this was after the second game of the series because I just saw the headlines and I started reading the quotes and I went, yeah, most of this stuff is basically, just giving a nothing burger to the media, trying to make sure that you don't say anything incendiary. And I don't think it's incendiary, but I do think that there's something to it. Roll it.
I think we need to be fearless, honestly. I mean, I don't think any team accomplishes anything special not being fearless. So I think we just need to be fearless and go out there and play our game and be aggressive and get after it.
So I love this because if there's one guy on the team that's fearless at the plate, it's Bo Bichette.
Yeah.
Guys, like, two strikes, it's totally fine. Whatever, we'll do that. To his detriment, I think, a lot of the times, where people go, look at Bo, two strikes, no problem. And then you look at the actual numbers and says, yeah, actually, it's probably not good getting two strikes. But, you know, he is. He's a fearless player. He's basically had the same demeanor his entire Blue Jays career. This is someone who, think about how often you get a Bo quote.
Mm-hmm.
Not very frequent for a guy that's one of the most prominent figures in all of Toronto sports.
Yep.
A guy who's the son of a major leaguer who clearly has a ton of confidence. Not someone that will go out and create a headline. Not someone where, yeah, I think most people would say, what does Bo sound like?
That's true, actually.
Right? And he's the face of the Toronto Blue Jays, yeah. Unquestionably now. He came back and you go, oh!
Yeah, immediately.
Daddy's home! Yeah, immediately. You know, it's just, it's completely different, the energy around the Blue Jays, the second Bo Bichette plays. It was incredible, too, that he was off, that he was injured. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, this is when we go about the rest versus rust thing. I'm not a huge believer in the ring rust stuff. I think, yeah, if you've been on, look at Hyunjin Ryu. Mm-hmm. Was off for God knows how long. Worked his way back. Baseball's a little different. You get a little practice run down in the minors, but Bo has been incredible immediately. And so, whatever. Sports, art, I'm going to make my own interpretation here. I think that Bo is looking around the locker room right now, and he might see some tight butts. He's probably seen some tight butts with the offense when he was gone. He came back, and those dudes were struggling at the dish. They just DFA'd the dude that was supposed to replace him, which, quick side tangent on that, just mm-hmm. a quick side tangent because we're here, on Paul DeJong, absolute unequivocal failure, right? He was a nightmare at the dish. He did nothing for this team. He played some all right defense, I guess. I don't remember him making any overly spectacular plays, but he wasn't a screw up there. He was kind of as advertised, but a little weak with the bat. But from a... if you weren't going to add a bat, and I know David Schneider came in and has provided this team with a bit of a lift at times in the Red Sox series and then in game two against Cincinnati. If you weren't going to add another bat and Bo was going to be out and you knew the offense was really, really going to struggle, adding a guy like DeJong, who was an empty calories guy, well, not even empty calories, zero calories guy,
mm-hmm.
It only added to that. It made a weak lineup feel weaker. And so that, to me, makes it even worse than it actually was with his numbers. That said, you do have to give the front office a little bit of credit for DFAing him instead of just doing what could have been easier, which is, hey, we're going to keep this guy on the bench. He's a vet. In case something else happens, blah, 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 we're going to actually just throw David Schneider back down to the minors.
Mm-hmm.
They ate $1 million where they just, and I know people go, what's $1 million? It's $1 million. I would take it. I'd like the million. I think a lot of us would like to even share the $1 million. Like a lot of us, we could make that go around just fine.
Split it four ways here.
So the fact that they convinced them to go, hey, don't worry about this. We're going to just DFA this dude. Peace out. $1 million of Paul DeJong.
Mm-hmm.
That usually is a pretty good sign of being a big boy club. I do, again, the signing, the trade, disaster, who knows what they even gave up for him, but disaster, all things surrounding Paul DeJong. Guy stunk, couldn't get a hit, nightmare timing for a player like that when the offense was in the doldrums, but big boy stuff, clearing out a guy and saying, you know what, we don't care about the $1 million, we don't care about the optics of this, we're just admitting defeat on it, we're keeping David Schneider here, and guess what, you got to win. You got to win on Saturday because of that. There's no way Paul DeJong does that. He doesn't come up with that big home run that David Schneider has that puts the Blue Jays out in front. They got to win because of it. Anyways, back to Bo before we get to John. Clearly the face of the franchise. Clearly the thing the team needed right now. Especially, I think that he does provide a little bit of Vlad cover. Like, the Vlad story is now becoming a national one, right? I don't know if you guys read Mike Petriello's piece on Vlad.
Yep.
It's like 11 reasons why he might stink.
Mm-hmm.
Well, really, it was 11 theories about why he's struggling at the plate.
Yeah.
But you read every single one of them, and I'm just like nodding, going like, yep, yep, no, yeah, hey, that. That's bad.
This, I think the last one was all the above, too.
Yeah, exactly, which is the case, right? This is, I always think, and what have I been saying all year about Vladdy, it's never one thing, right? It's usually a bunch of different things. Unless the thing is an injury, it's rarely one thing. It's usually a confluence of events that have caused something, which is why it's like, I actually really enjoyed a piece like that. But Bo comes back, he provides a little bit of cover for Vladdy, and he just immediately starts tearing the cover off the baseball and reminds everybody, oh, good, yes, this guy back. This is the best offensive player on the team. They need him to get red hot down the playoff stretch. But I think that he came in, they win that game, he's hitting right away, and he has the authority. And as sort of a leader, this is a bit of a leadership moment for him. He steps up and says that they need to be fearless at the plate. That what does that make me think of? A couple things. One, these guys and runners in scoring position, looking at them thinking, man, you guys have been tight all year. Stop it. Yep. Relax. We need you to not be scared out there when the game's on the line. We need you to be like me, where you fall down two strikes, who cares? Keep battling. Keep pushing. Two, again, this is just my interpretation. This is the way that I want to hear it. Two, I think he's probably looking around, seeing the standings. Mariners right there, getting hot. Julio Rodriguez is the greatest player who ever laced up. He's like Shohei Ohtani's old news. It's all about J-Rod
move
now.
Move over Shohei.
Shohei, who cares? Who cares about you even? It's all about J-Rod. Ever since he grabbed that baseball, that catch where he faked it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I swear to God, the timing is almost exact. He has been incredible. Mariners are red hot. The standings are getting tight. Blue Jays tight butts at the dish with runners in scoring position. And then I also thought that it was a little bit for Vladdy. I did. I thought it was a little bit of, dude, how many times are you beating the first pitch into the dirt? How many times are you leaving those meatballs? You know that? That was the most interesting stat from the Petriello piece, is how many, and Ennis tweeted it too. So actually, credit to Ennis, because he had this thing first out of anybody that I saw, which is that Vladdy's getting more meatballs this season, more down the middle of the plate, not what I was going to say, because that's what I say to friends in private, that kind of fastball. But yeah, you get the drift. Mm-hmm. He's leaving those this year. He just doesn't look like a guy that is very confident in his approach. And I wondered if Bo, when he's watching Vladdy right now, is thinking, dude, you're the number one guy that needs to be fearless. I trust George Springer is going to come around on this thing. He's going to be all right. Whit Merrifield's hitting 300. What's the piece that you miss? It's Vladdy. I think that in some ways, even if it's subconscious, he's got some of that has to be on his mind because of Vladdy. Anyways, John Morosi, MLB Network insider, you're in Williamsport for the Little League World Series. That's fun. How we doing, buddy?
Doing great, my friend. One of my favorite trips of the year. We had the Little League Classic last night, the Phillies and Nationals, and it's been a very great trip. I actually have my entire family with me, which is a fitting thing to do, to have the Morosi minivan depart from Michigan. My three kids in the back. It's just a great story. Great family time.
I was going to say, was that one of them right now? Was one of them just yapping at you just right now?
Yeah, well, that was certainly them. The three of them were coming down to ask me if they could have more Fruit Loops or... you guys can all go up and find Mama. Go for it.
Dude,
JD, you never know with this group.
Man, that's one of the best things about a road trip with the family when I was younger was cereal. It's like, now you're at home, breakfast is healthy. You're on the road, you used to get, do they still have those, John? I'm not a family, do they still have the little mini boxes of cereal where the kids all fight over which boxes that they're going to get? And they basically have to do a draft, like the power rankings of the cereals?
So it's a great question, and I can report to you I can report to you about what we have found here on our travels. The variety of cereals still exist in the continental breakfast, but they're not really in the boxes because, of course, that's not environmentally friendly. So, but they are in what I actually think are cooler, which are those massive hoppers of cereal. And then you sort of turn the dial and then the cereal is dispensed. So you usually have, I think we've got three options here this morning.
That's all
right. That seems to be quite standard. Yeah, more than enough. But that's all you need.
I like how we're like, We can't have the box. It's not environmentally friendly. And meanwhile, I saw today, this morning, I woke up, I opened up Instagram. The first thing I saw is, it's like, here's Neymar on his own Boeing jet that he's flying across Europe. And you're like, yeah, that's probably a little bit more than the little cereal box that I want. I got to feel guilty about the cereal box while Neymar flies around in a private Boeing jet. Or Leo DiCaprio, who's making a movie like, guys, global warming is very serious. And then he's on a yacht, I read the other day, that's like, yeah, actually, this thing, the travel of one of his trips is more than your car is going to use in a lifetime. I was like, that's interesting. Anyways, moving off of it. So I got to start with this, John. What are people around baseball saying about Vladdy right now? Because like I said, it feels like there's a bit of a tipping point where this is becoming a conversation that's bigger than just here in Toronto.
No, I think it is a massive conversation. And I heard what you mentioned about the very excellent and detailed piece that Mike Petriello wrote at MLB.com about this exact topic. I mean, it's a story. And I think it's a story because we just saw a couple years back a great MVP discussion between him and Shohei, and obviously we're not there right now, and also the conversation about what his market value is, and that's another very rich topic, because for a while it looked as though he was going to be paid like one of the greats, and now the numbers just simply don't say that he should be. We've talked about this before, how he's effectively an average player at first base in the major leagues right now, and when you look at it and consider his peers at the position, that's basically where he's at. And in fact, he's even tipped below average. You look at right now at Fangraphs, he ranks 20th in WAR among first basemen in Major League Baseball, behind Ty France, behind Alec Bohm, who's now playing third base back predominantly. He's behind Carlos Santana, who was just traded at the deadline. He's behind Spencer Torkelson. He's behind a lot of guys. And I just think that there's a lot of reasons for it. And Mike's piece mentioned them. I think to your point, he's getting balls in the strike zone that he's not doing damage on, and that's really as simple as it is. I mean, there's not a very like esoteric explanation here. He's not doing damage on pitches that he should be doing damage on, and the result is a fairly average offensive output and nowhere close to being the franchise type first baseman that he's been in the past and the one that he expects to be paid like, because the numbers just simply do not compute to a contract like that.
Well, that's just it. If you would have told me a couple of years ago, hey, Vladdy's got to get in on a $300+ million contract, everyone would have said, yeah, that's a lock. That's 100% going to happen for this guy, whether it's in Toronto, whether it's somebody else. And now, yeah, it seems nuts to think about him as a $300 million guy. And I wonder if, again, we're in the middle of a season. The Jays are in the middle of a playoff chase. And, yeah, they're neck and neck with the Mariners and the wild card. And now I guess Houston's in there too. But how do you think, like, if there's any indication for you as to how this is kind of going to go this offseason? Because the one thing with the Blue Jays has always been, at least from the fan perception standpoint, and even to a degree, media members and insiders, the consensus was always kind of like, hey, it's going to be really hard for the Jays to get Bo and Vladdy under contract, but one of them certainly they will end up doing. And Bo has his guaranteed money. He doesn't seem like a guy who's afraid to bet on himself. And all of a sudden you have the situation with Vladdy where now you're going to have to, potentially let him go into another year without a contract extension. Do you think that it's likely that, let's put it this way, as of right now, do you think it's likely that both of those guys enter their final years without contract extensions?
Likely might be a little strong for me in terms of saying that, because I do think that there's at least a reasonable chance that Bo could get done as a multi-year deal, just because, to your point, they were able to agree on a two-year deal that I think was very productive and mutually beneficial to both sides. Bo is also, in my judgment, you see his path a bit more. And you also honestly have seen in the last couple weeks what this team is without him. And it's just not the same group. Mm-hmm. And I think they could, if you look at their group, and if you were to ask yourself if they had to be without Vladdy for a couple weeks, how different would they be relative to how they are without Bo? There's really no comparison right now.
No, none.
I think the one thing I would say, and this is going to be fascinating this offseason and as a little bit of a preview. Number one, this offseason, I would not see any scenario in which you could say that and make your team better. I think with respect to Vladdy, I realize he's coming off a down year, but let's just say for the sake of argument, you know that it's likely that a major first baseman is going to be out there on the trade market in Pete Alonso. So you know that there are going to be teams that are active in that space already. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's logical to say, hey, listen, here's someone who has played at this level before, had a down year, but what can we do for him? What would you see for him out there? And I think that there's a way to almost piggyback off of the Alonso market and let Alonso gauge things. And then Alonso is only has 1 year left before free agency. Vladdy has two. So you can kind of price them off each other a little bit. And then I think make that decision based on, you know, what kind of offers come in. And I think for me, it's entirely possible that Vladdy would bring back, because it's an additional year of control, offers that are somewhat comparable to what you're talking about for Alonso. And also there might be some teams like, for example, the Phillies, who you would say are probably less likely to be trade partners for the Mets. But if the Phillies are comfortable with Harper playing the outfield again next year, depending on how the rest of their club plays out, would the Phillies want to take Vladdy and have that? I do think that's one team that I could see. You know, Dave Dombrowski's always liked having stars. I think Vladdy in the right circumstance, what would that ballpark be for him? I think that'd be a really intriguing option, I think, for both parties there, and maybe see if there's some young talent that the Jays could bring in and maybe look at the future that way.
I was talking to Ennis about this last week, the last show when we did, hey, what happens if you trade Vladdy scenarios, right? Or should you even entertain the idea of trading Vladdy? Clearly, they have to talk to other teams, right? They have to gauge what's out there. I think it's irresponsible in general to just say, hey, all players are off the table, don't even call us about somebody. But no, I think that you'd even field offers on Vladdy, like the kind of scenario that you're outlining. My only fear is this. If I was a Jays fan, this is the exact kind of trade I would want, where you go, hey, there was a guy who was an MVP candidate who's 24 years old, who's got really good hard hit rate, and who has this incredible pedigree. And, yeah, we can't really put exactly what it is that's happening to this guy, but we feel like if there's one or two things that might change, all of a sudden you could have an MVP candidate on your hands. And I'm like, yeah, do that trade. And now it's being flipped, and you say, well, no, you're the ones who would be shipping the player out. And as frustrating as this season's been for Vladdy, and also this, I think the strongest case for the Jays would be, how else do you make your team better, and how could you round out a group that, yeah, is going to lose their third baseman, going to lose a bunch of guys in free agency, like Whit Merrifield's going to be gone, doesn't have a bunch of burgeoning players in the minor leagues, right? They've really got a lot of work to do with the position players. Vladdy could really end up helping that. But, boy, it just the risk of a move like that, I would have to assume that, yeah, Vladdy's value would still be high. This would basically, what I'm getting to is, if they would entertain something like that, are we kind of dismissing the idea that you're, quote, selling low on a player, as in you wouldn't really get that great of a return for him if he was shopped this offseason?
Here's what I would say to that, is that the upside value of keeping him is that there has to be a reasonable chance that he bounces back. Like, he didn't forget how to hit.
Yeah.
Okay. So like I think to answer your question, the only way you trade him is if you've got a really great offer. That's the only way that you would do it. Because if you don't have a great offer, you keep him and you hope on the bounce back. Mm-hmm. If someone gives you an offer that meaningfully improves your club for next year and you think gives you greater overall value, make the deal. Mm-hmm. But if they don't overwhelm you, then just keep Vladdy and say to yourself exactly the very logical thought process that you outlined. Mm-hmm. You need to get a new third baseman. You need to figure out the outfield. That kind of a thought process is exactly right. Unless you look at it and say, okay, wait a minute. What if we trade Vladdy and that allows us to get a third baseman and an outfielder, and depending on how the deal comes together. And if trading him satisfies two needs, And then you look to first base and find somebody that you believe can approximate his value, mm-hmm. then go for that. I mean, that's the irony here is that at that position, you are like there's if you look at the overall production that Vladdy has had, at least based on mm-hmm. wins above replacement, he's not that far away from what Josh Bell is doing. Josh Bell's a free agent.
Yeah.
So if you need what Vladdy has done for you this year, okay, well then if you can trade Vladdy and get yourself a starting third baseman and a potential outfielder, do that. 100%. Sign Josh Bell or sign Carlos Santana and then they'll basically do what Vladdy's doing this year.
No question. Again, Vladdy's 121st out of 140 qualified players in Fangraphs WAR. Like it's an uglier season than I think a lot of people have wanted to admit for a long time, given Vladdy's age and his stature with the organization. And yeah, just the, like, I think that there's also actually a little bit of Bo Bichette struggled all year last year and people were really killing Bo for it, myself included, when I went, what the hell is this season? What is happening here? And then all of a sudden down the stretch, he was so incredible that his numbers leveled off to exactly the guy he is. And he went, holy crap. Okay. Maybe we don't want to get a little too reactionary here, but yeah, it is different with Vladdy and you're right. It's just, it's way easier to replace what he's giving you. And I wanted to get to that essentially with you, which is dispelling the myth that, hey, the Blue Jays would be trading low. Obviously, if they traded him after his MVP season, they would be getting more than what they would be getting now. But yes, I think there's a bit of a misnomer amongst the fans right now where they're going, well, you can't trade Vladdy because you'll get nothing back. We're saying here that the only scenario that he's getting traded is if you're getting something of significant back. Okay, so do you think this does material affect Bo Bichette? Like the way the front office handles him this offseason, going, okay, well, Vladdy, we don't know. It's a mystery. Maybe he's being shopped. Maybe he's not. Maybe we're just letting those 2 years run down and see what happens. We'll risk it. We'll bet on ourselves or we'll bet on him. But do you think that even after an offseason, like Bo's getting paid now for the next couple of years, he's making $11 million next season. He's making $16 million the following. Do you think that, yeah, it was pretty quiet with his negotiation in general. It just kind of hit. It was like, hey, they're going to go to arbitration. No, they're not because they don't want to upset the player. Yeah, what do you think that looks like this offseason between Bo Bichette and the Blue Jays?
And I guess I would say this, that the fact that he's got a multi-year deal that takes him all the way through the arb years makes it a little bit less urgent to negotiate that deal on top of this deal. And by that I mean you've already had the conversation about multi-year deals. I'm sure in the course of talking last offseason, they got to know what Bo's price point would be theoretically for a longer-term deal, and so they know that. And as of February of this year, they weren't able to make a 7 or an 8 year deal work. He's got the guaranteed money. He seems, to your point, to be comfortable betting on himself. Mm-hmm. I guess what I would say is, if you're Bo, where is your incentive to do that deal? Mm-hmm. It would appear to me that it's relatively low. You've got a contract for 2 more years. You got guaranteed money coming in. Why do that? Mm-hmm. And I think that Bo looks at the market. I mean, obviously, it's from a professional baseball family. He gets it. He probably looks around and says, wait a minute. If I get to be a free agent in 2 more years, what options will there be for me? How interesting will that marketplace be? I kind of think he plays this thing out. I mean, I look at it and ask myself, what is his incentive to 1 year later do a deal that gives up free agent years? And he obviously didn't seem too eager to do that in February. So I'm just not really sure what would change that would make him want to do that now. So it's not a very it's kind of an uncomfortable situation for the Jays, because if you look at the reality and say, okay, if Bo is going to leave potentially after 25, mm-hmm. and then you look around your team and say, wait a minute, where's my next group of young position players who are going to be the heartbeat of my offense by then? Mm-hmm. Maybe David Schneider becomes that kind of a player. But, you know, Kirk potentially could still be on the team at that point. But you're starting to ask some guys to really hang around and lengthen out their primes. I don't know. I mean, they've got some tough decisions to make, and that's where they're trying to thread the needle here by extending this window to win, and it's not going to be a very easy conversation, JD, this offseason.
No, and you're bang on, and that's I think the incentive for Bo, or the scenario that I'm trying to outline here to a degree, is what changes for you is that the Jays don't have another bullet in the gun with Vladdy anymore. There's no other way to appease the winning window and the fan base with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, if they announced that contract this offseason, unless it was some kind of an insane bargain that Vladdy was just going to say, you know what, I'm not paying myself. And then people would be even afraid of it too, because they would be going, wait, why is this guy willing to sign this terrible contract with two more years left before he can, you get my drift. With Bo, it's that he's now got the organization over a barrel, where he would be going, you know what, the time is actually now for me to negotiate this deal, because you guys have to be feeling that stress to a certain degree. You want to have some certainty with your organization. Hell, the thing like what I want to get to next is Alek Manoah too. It's like, you know, the Jays thought that they had three guys that were the faces of their franchise last year, and now they have one. Like, the long-term fate, like, guarantee-ish, as far as you can go with guarantees in this sport, it's Bo. And so that would be my incentive if I'm him, is I'm at least going to the table and offering something outlandish and saying, if you want me to sign a long-term deal, this is the number. It's crazy. You probably won't consider it, but maybe given all those circumstances, the organization goes, you know what? This is crazy, but yeah, we can't live in a reality where, yeah, Vlad is the guy or Manoah doesn't bounce back. Anyway, last thing. What's your read on the Manoah situation? Because apparently there's a plan. This was reported by Ben Nicholson-Smith about, hey, he's still in Toronto. They want him to start in AAA, but he's not there yet. They don't know exactly what's going on. I guess this is sort of a two-parter. What do you make of just that situation in general, where they're not just sending him down and letting him pitch immediately? And do you have any insight into, how Manoah has been dealing with this demotion, especially after the Florida Complex League stuff?
It is now getting to be a bit of a concerning situation. I mean, for me, I would say this. It's now been 11 days since we last saw him on the mound in Cleveland. Yeah. And so if you're trying to work your way back to the major leagues, my thought would be that he should be on a mound somewhere that we're seeing him pitch, and he's working on the things that the Jays know that he needs to work on. And clearly, from at least a public perspective, that's not happening. So I'm a little bit concerned about that, I suppose, is the word I would use, just because I'm not sure what the plan is, and also to what extent he's still a strong option to make a start for them if, let's say, and hope it doesn't happen, somebody has a strained elbow at some point in time in the Jays rotation in the next month. Is he the guy that gets the ball? If he's not pitching, we don't know. I mean, how stretched out he is. I mean, the one thing the Jays have been to this point in time this season is incredibly blessed with good health in the starting rotation area. You look at other teams, I think the Rays, the last I checked, it had 16 different starting pitchers this year. The Jays have had basically half that. And that is a massive difference. And so, I am a little bit perplexed. I can understand the emotion for Alec that he probably believes in his own heart. Look, I went down to the minor leagues. I worked on some adjustments, and I did what was asked. Obviously, the first start against Detroit was tremendous. It was 8 strikeouts and no walks. Mm-hmm. But then the walks came back. And I think that the reality is, and it's tough, he did have a good solid outing against the Red Sox at Fenway, which was another good data point. But the reality is, I think we all see this, there are 5 better starting pitchers in the Jays organization than him right now. There are 5. And so I understand the Jays' idea here, which is basically he's not one of the best 5. And I understand Alec's perspective that, hey, I've shown at least against Detroit and against Boston that I've still got something. So, but at the end of the day, I know it's tough from a pride standpoint and everything else, but I would say that much more than throwing simulated games, that if I were him, and if I wanted to prove to the Jays that I could still be part of this team and maybe even make a playoff roster at some point to give you length, I would need to be on a mound in a competitive situation, showing them that I'm working on the things that were talked about and being in the team environment. I'm a little bit old school in that way. I think that being in the team environment, being accountable to your teammates and taking a start every 5th day is the best thing that he could do at this time, in my view. And we'll see what happens here in the days and weeks ahead.
Yeah, that's just it to me. I hadn't even really thought about it. Like, I, until I saw the piece kind of pop up on sportsnet.ca and was like, yeah, Minot is still in Toronto. And I went, huh? He's been off the team. Like you said, it's 11 days. And I just went, and I'm not trying to, I know that people always get mad, media members are like, well, I find something else to talk about. And I'm like, I've always felt like this story this year has even been a little underrated, understated, given, yeah, Manoah is a hyper-competitive guy who absolutely believes in himself and who loves to compete, loves the game. And you send him down to Florida Complex League, he says, all right, I'm doing everything that you want. It's at a personal sacrifice to him. And he comes back, and the results are mixed, right? But it wasn't like you mentioned, it's been Detroit was good, Boston was good, and then there was one other start in there. I want to say maybe Seattle was all right. It was, like, not a disastrous one. And then there was – it was basically a mixed bag where it was, like, two were really bad, one was okay, or two were okay, two were solid. And if I'm him, I'm like, damn, you're really going to do this to me again, or there's at least potential for him to be pretty upset about this entire situation, not getting that opportunity. And, yeah, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this plays out over – yeah, the course of this last little stretch run and then the postseason. And then, yeah, the offseason, of course, too. John, enjoy the time with your family. Thanks so much for spending some time with me today. And, yeah, go hit. You still, yeah, is it, it's brunch time or breakfast time. Like, yeah, crush those amazing cereals. Treat yourself.
Yes, I think that's the plan. I'm going to help myself to the cereal bar as the kids hell already yes. have. And we'll look forward to our next conversation, JD. Beauty. Thanks so much.
See you, man. Thanks. John Morosi. Down at the Little League World Series. That's not really a Canadian thing. Like, all we get up here is the one clip if there's a kid that says something funny.
Yeah.
Where there was that one kid who went, I hit dingers or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, I like chicks and dingers. And you're like, okay.
or cash money.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. The only thing is those kids is where you're like, how much of the prom thing is coming?
The Canadian team got crushed this year at the World Series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They
we
lost 10-1 to Mexico.
Ouchie.
Also, there was some guy, some kid that was hitting like 80-something on the radar gun.
Really?
Yeah, against
really?
Canada. Yeah.
Against Canada.
They got perfect gamed in their tournament opener.
Oh, it's a tough one. Shout out to the kids.
Tough way to go out.
Okay, so yeah, quick couple things off that. One, what is this? San Diego was the
You were talking about Manoah's start. San Diego was the other one where he gave up four runs. And
I was like, these write in. So Joe writes
I meant
in
to
my
write
document where I keep all my stuff.
I meant to write mess start.
He's my stats guy. Normally I'm like, hey, Joe, let's go to you for the stats. He just wrote San Diego was the other mess start. And I'm like, okay, yeah. All right, that makes sense now. Except for, yeah, you didn't write start, wrote star. Anyway, yeah, Manoah, okay. Quick. Couple quick things. One, that's a really scary scenario, the one that we're outlining here. Is like, hey, Jays are in a playoff race. That's the main focus, blah, blah, blah. But what are you supposed to say? Like, they're going to be in it. They're going to battle. I was actually trying to think to myself two things in reference to the wild card race. One is, was actually that a better outcome? Like, you're on the outside looking in, right? You're still behind Seattle because they kicked the crap out of Houston, but now Houston's in the mix too. Yeah. Like that you dragged somebody else down
like the muck.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, would you have preferred that the Jays were still in it with the Mariners behind them with that weird tiebreaker scenario, but they're nipping at their heels and you're like, oh boy. But that the Astros would have been above them and it would have just been a two-team race, or do you prefer the three-team race? I actually don't know what the math says about that. The math might not be mathing on this, is all I'm saying. Yeah. But to me, I actually thought that's the better scenario. Even though the Astros we all think of as like clutch and mature and they'll definitely make it, I went, yeah.
They're only a game ahead.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'd rather
close.
It's way more fun with the three teams. Plus, like, imagine the Astros don't make it.
Yeah.
Baseball fans would rejoice.
Of course. So that's all. I was just kind of wondering that scenario where I went, what would we prefer? Mariners got smushed. They were a little bit further back. They're a game and a half back of the Jays, but it's just two teams.
Right.
Or
then Houston would be like three, four games ahead at that point.
I think the Jays have the tiebreaker with Houston too. I'm almost positive they do. I'm almost positive that the Jays pulled that one out in the middle of the year, and that was a big story. I remember thinking actually when they were reporting on it, because my phantom memory here was them going, hey, that was a big outing. They get the tiebreaker with Houston and blah, blah, blah. And I went, we're in June or something. It was early. It was very early. Anyway, so there's that. So that's my positive spin for that. But two is, I was thinking about this with Vladdy. you have Belt, and the offense has been so crap, but Bobichet just came back. And the one thing that stuck out from Petrello's piece on MLB.com for me, that because there were so many things that, like, I'm not going to pretend numerically I knew when it came to Vladdy, right? But there were a lot of things in the piece, for those of you that haven't read it, it's up on MLB.com right now. I think he's actually, for those of you that haven't read the piece, listen to Jays Talk Plus today, because the magnificent Blake Murphy is going to have Mike Petrello on. So it's like the two top dogs in the number scene are going to discuss this very number-heavy article. Mm-hmm. I will listen. I can't wait to listen. So listen to Jays Talk Plus later today. 10:30, you said? Boom. Blake Murphy, 10:30, or podcasts, whatever. You're not around at 10:30? We got podcasts, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Subscribe to this one, too.
Listen where you find podcasts.
So yeah, go listen to Blake's interview today. So there were all these things in the piece where I went, yep, this checks out, but here's some numbers behind it. Now I feel smarter, even though I'll never be able to reference it off the cuff, you know?
But a lot of stuff that you're like from watching, you're like, that tracks.
No, exactly. Like, basically, I'm going to keep it in a tab all year long. I'm going to have it ready.
Did you actually know? Yeah. And then you just click it.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, did you know that distance on barrels by exit velo in 2019 was 375? that's me. Lying.
Me when I lie.
Yeah, lying when I know things. Or is lying and saying I know something. But okay, no, this was theory number two. He's not hitting the ball as far as you'd think, given how hard he's hitting it. And this is from Petrello, he's like, quote, this oddity. And this is crazy, is that when he's getting those meatballs and the ones that he's hitting with like pure barrels, he's not hitting them nearly as far. He's hitting them an average of 365 feet. The average is 385 feet. It's the shortest of his career. Mm-hmm. He has the finger injury thing yesterday, and I kind of went, I wonder if you give him a little bit of a breather here.
Give him a breath, yeah.
It's just so weird to think about that when you're in a dogfight for a wild card spot, and this guy was one of your all-stars this year. Mm-hmm. This is the supposed face of your franchise, the runner-up face of your franchise, whatever the hell he actually is to this team. He's clearly, again, his OPS plus is 116. He's an above-average major league hitter. He's been one of their best guys with runners in scoring position this year. He's like hitting 300 when runners in scoring position. And yet, there's actually a conversation with this guy right now of, hey, if the finger is even... like, let's say the finger's at 75%. You let him sit. Because clearly, if he's at 100, you don't even screw around. You're just like, dude, get back out there. Yeah, figure exactly. it out. But if the finger is, like, he can play. Like, he's, what do they say, hurt, not injured. If he's hurt, not injured, do you just run him out there and say, yo, laddie, go. We need you. Or do you say, you know what? Take a couple days off. Don't work out. You know, okay. Anybody who works out knows this, and this is kind of the funny thing about. So you lose your gains always immediately, like especially at my age. It's like I take 3 days off working out, and I have two bad meals, and I'm like, "Holy crap, it's over! I'm done. I'm retired. It's everything that I worked so hard for this entire time. It's over. It's over. It's over.
I'm finished."
He's still young. He's still in his prime, but there is something too. Like you take those rest days when you take a couple of days off in a row, and you go back to the gym, and you're like, "Oh my god, I'm going to be so weak," and then you're actually stronger, and you're like, "Whoa, I'm a beast." Yeah. I'm out here just crushing. And then the next day, your arms are spaghetti noodles and you don't know, like, you can't do anything. You
can't even lift a cereal box.
But that's it. Yeah. Not even the little kids one. But there is something to that. So I wonder, maybe they consider that with Vladdy. It's at least a talking point, which again, to me, is nuts. And I feel stupid saying it. When the words come out of my mouth, you can go, so wait, you're saying the team that can't hit, that's been struggling to score runs, you want them to take the OPS plus 116 guy out of the lineup?
What series would you sit him for then? Baltimore one?
That's what I'm saying, which is the craziest part. Yeah. They got an off day today. Mm-hmm. And what happens if you just like told them, yo, rest. Rest for a couple of these games. But also, dude, it's weird. There's so many things that could happen with this. There's no winning for the Vladdy narrative if you go into the Baltimore series without him, unless he comes back and tears the cover off the baseball and is amazing. Like, unless it works out, because the risk of that is crazy, because there's two scenarios here. You go into Baltimore and you beat their ass, finally, and you do without Vladdy, and then it just gets louder, where people go, we didn't even need Vlad. And that's maybe why they won. You get that guy.
Exactly.
That guy shows up at the party, right?
Yeah.
that's bad. All of a sudden, maybe he doesn't feel as connected to the, I'm sure he does feel connected to the team, but maybe that puts him in his own head even a little bit more, where he went, you guys are having fun without me?
Yeah, the team wins without him.
You ever see all your friends do a trip?
That's the worst.
Am I the problem?
Yeah, you see all your friends, and they come back, and they start telling all the stories, and you're like, yeah, how about you shut up about that trip I couldn't come on? Or that place you guys went together and I wasn't a part of
it. It was like so much fun, guys.
Yeah, shut up about that time without me time.
One inside joke reference and you're like, oh my God, I hate all of you.
Yeah, no. I don't even know. I'm going to get new friends. I'm going to find a new group. Yeah, that's the only way. I got to get rid of this group. Hey, we had lots of good years together. It's just time to meet some new bros, you know, branch out. Maybe I will go to Joe's Barbecue.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, you know what? But then the option two is you lose that series and you lose a couple of games and maybe it's by a couple swings of the bat. And then you also wonder, oh boy, whoops, maybe we should have had the guy who hits it sometimes in the lineup and who's done it with runners in scoring position. So yeah, it's a little pickle of a jam, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy scenario they've outlined for or that they've created for themselves and that Vlad Jr. has created for the team as well. But I do wonder. I don't think it's the craziest. Let's just put it this way. For a team that is half game out of the wild card, who is fighting tooth and nail to get in the playoffs, who has struggled offensively, I think there's a case for them to rest their all-star slugger first baseman for a couple of games heading into a series against a divisional rival that has completely owned them this season and who I think the Jays would benefit greatly from beating psychologically in a series.
Yeah,
100%. Crazy. Anyway, quick break. Let's come back.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. It's what you always say, Toronto sports fans. I just wanted meaningful baseball in August and September. Well, you got it. You got it. And you don't have to watch Paul DeJong play baseball anymore. It's pretty sweet.
136 OPS.
Hey, he fielded a couple grounders.
Ugh. Yeah. I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but that was not fun at all watching him play. Oof. And it wasn't, again, it wasn't all his fault. You're right. Because if that dude would have just showed up and the team was 2015 Jays or even last year's Blue Jays offense, you would have been fine. You would have gone, oh, cool, slick fielding. Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm.
Put him ninth in the lineup.
With everybody struggling and then having all of a sudden innings where it would be him, Varsho, and Espinal, you would go, oh, yeah, can't do this right now, thank you. Wait, this is supposed to be an entertainment product? We're supposed to pay for this?
Out.
Yeah, anyway, we're going to get off the radio portion, but we got a bunch of stuff in the pod today. So, yeah, obviously now we're going to talk cereals.
Obviously.
Everyone's all fired up for cereal talk.
Simon immediately put it in.
Yeah. I also like this. James Harden says it's too late to mend relationships with Sixers. It's like, yeah, man, you already said the Maury thing. Why did we need clarification on this? But yeah, the UFC 292, some more Twitter shenanigans. We'll do all that in the pod only. So subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars if you're a good person and you like this and you want to support it without doing anything, really. Just one button. Share it. Do all those things. Follow on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. I'll share Best Bet later. And then, yeah, head over to the podcast. Yeah, yeah, test and talk. All right, podcast time. Leave that in. That was good. That was good stuff. That was really nice. That was like the harmonies on, by the way, the Chili Peppers album.
Pretty good.
Or Pet Sounds. We're like, ooh, wow, look at these amazing harmonies. Anyway, all right. You guys want to do cereal talk?
Yeah,
what do you want
talk.
To talk about? Who wrote that down? Simon
put it in.
He's like,
put
yes, cereal talk. All right, what do you got to say about
so
cereal?
You have to take it away.
There's so many takes, right? Yeah. I mean,
there's so many takes, right?
There's just a lot to unpack here. This could go really long. It could go many different ways.
Where do you want to begin?
I think that the best way to just do this probably is like, give me, what's your Mount Rushmore of cereals?
So top four.
Because like,
that's really hard because it for me, Mount Rushmore cereals changes a lot. But I will say that if you told me, hey, you've got to only have four. I don't need cereal anymore. Like I'm an adult.
No, of course not. I don't
either. Like I'm an adult. So the premise here is not like, hey, desert island, you need to have, because the only cereal I still eat is granola,
right,
which I'll throw on top of yogurt or treat myself to a bowl once in a while. I buy the like protein ones. I love how I'm such a sucker thing. People just put like protein on a bag of stuff and I look at it. God, that's good for me.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll put that in
protein
there.
Protein and fibers and you're like, yep,
no,
I'm
you
in.
Look at the sugar on some of these things and you're like, whoa, whoops.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe just some egg whites. Maybe just some Greek yogurt. Anyway, Mount Rushmore of cereals. I'm just going to do this as though it was my favorite sugary cereals of all time that I love. Because if you say something like, well, Vector, I would know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is like nostalgia stuff.
Vector,
like, this
is still real?
Yeah. I don't know. But
Vector's still around.
Yeah. What did Vector? Why did Vector just catch a stray?
Because I'm just saying that Vector had a moment where it was like, Vector was basically... That when I think about the early 2000s in terms of diet culture, it was the Atkins diet and Vector.
Yeah, Vector was like there's cereal and then there's Vector.
Yeah, there's Vector. You and I would eat Vector before going to school, being like, man, I'm gonna have 100 points tonight.
I'm fueled. For the day.
I'm ready. Do you see this guy on a mountain bike on the box? So Vector-y. Were the Vector athletes?
Yeah, you eat Vector, you can do this.
No, Vector was real hot. We went from, like, we don't really know if we can make any kind of healthy cereals. The healthiest, it was basically sugar in a bowl or shredded wheat. And then Vector came in and went, yeah, we'll take over here. We'll power you through a day. I wonder if Vector is actually even at all healthy for you.
Can't be. I mean, it can be, but I'm sure it's not.
So Vector, not on the list.
After all that.
No,
honorable mention.
Here's what I will say. Here's the first things that came to my mind. Yeah. And so I'm just going to go.
This is just off the top of the dome, obviously.
Off the top of my dome, like, immediately, I would say number one on the Mount Rushmore, no questions asked, like, it's in a different category, is Reese Puffs.
Ooh.
A bowl of Reese Puffs.
I was not expecting that.
Oh, my God. A bowl of Reese Puffs and then having the milk in the bowl.
Be chocolatey?
Yeah.
No, so I am
untouchable.
A Nesquik Puffs guy.
I was going to say that.
I loved that
I was
stuff.
Just about to
Simon go to jail.
Just annihilate those people being like, imagine thinking those were comparable things.
Jail.
Listen, if I was, if I was in prison and they were like, you can have Nesquik, I would be,
really?
Thank you. This is awesome to have. But out in the free market where if you're puffing, you know, you're hitting a puff and you would go Nesquik over Reese Puffs.
You're saying one puff is dramatically superior to the other.
Oh, yeah. Like, unquestionably. Everything about it. From the texture to the taste to the color, like everything about Reese Puffs. Reese Puffs, you can eat dry.
Yeah, and that's quick you can. You
no
need the milk.
No way.
Okay, so this is immediately veering off of the Mount Rushmore conversation then, because I've got so many other questions.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
We're comparing puffs.
Yeah.
Let's compare toast crunches. Are you a cinnamon toast crunch or a French toast crunch?
I'm a neither. No, I'm a neither.
French toast.
Okay, please don't leave me hanging.
Cinnamon toast crunch over French toast crunch.
No. Yeah.
No. The original. Well,
French toast crunch is number one for me.
Yeah, I know, but you're a child, so you're still actually should be the number one person in the polling here. But here's the thing: I don't like French toast anything. So the idea
like
of
even
you,
just normal
no,
French,
even
toast.
Normal French toast, I don't like
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't the texture of it, the bread.
Interesting.
Not a fan. There's two things that I hate with breakfast that people just adore and go nuts for: hollandaise sauce for me. And French toast.
I've only ever had one hollandaise sauce that I actually liked. I haven't really liked it outside of that.
Hollandaise sauce is tight. It's so good.
Yeah, I don't.
I could never really.
I don't, it's not
I'm
for
with
me.
You.
It's
I
not
couldn't
for
really
me.
Get into it.
It's just not. I get it. What emulsified butter?
Yeah.
Although it's funny because if you eat like any amount of hollandaise sauce, it's just you've eaten your butter quotient for
100%.
2 years.
Oh, 100%. It's so bad for you.
You're not supposed
so
to.
So bad for you.
Yeah, I just know some people that all the way through school, every fancy breakfast they would get would be hollandaise sauce.
Yeah.
Hey, Benny, yeah.
Your arteries are crying out for some carrots.
Anyway, I'm not a big sweet for breakfast guy anyway. I would want a waffle. I actually kind of like chicken and waffles, but that's really heavy to crush as a brunch. And I would never order a waffle, a Belgian waffle with, you know, that's, I'm an eggs guy. I'm just pure, give me an omelet or some variation of that.
You know what I started doing, by the way?
Yeah.
out for breakfast with, like, let's say it's me and my wife, a couple other couples, whatever, there's like six or whatever.
Yeah, because you can't just hang out with another dude. So it's other couples.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So we're out for breakfast.
That's why everybody gets their eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody gets their eggs or whatever. You know what I've started doing? Kind of a pro move here. Order a pancakes for the table. No one wants the full pancake. Yeah. Then you just get a little sweet bite.
That's actually a really nice move. That's a really sexy move that I'm going to do.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah. That's a sweet move. That's a sweet move. I like that move.
Redeemed myself from the Nesquik take, so yeah, I'm happy with
that's
that.
That's much better. Okay, so back to the Mount Rushmore. Reese Puffs, 100%, no question. Top Puff, top cereal, top everything.
Top dog.
I'm going Fruit Loops because it's the OG classic.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, without Fruit Loops, we're nothing. You know? Fruit Loops.
One of the first innovations in the cereal game.
Fruit Loops is a hero to the other cereals. And when you were first a kid, seeing Toucan Sam smell the Fruit Loops and rip around the forest with his nose and knowing that there could be a possible day that you would also get Fruit Loops. Massive.
No, what Fruit Loops did for the game?
Good stage. Fruit Loops and Lucky Charms, I think, are the two top tier, like, OG sweet cereals that every single person just strived for. Yeah. Like, that's the real debate.
They were the pinnacle.
Yeah, I feel like if there was ever a cereal civil war, those two things, like, what is at the very top?
Yeah,
Fruit Loops and Lucky Charms.
They're the Captain America and Iron Man of cereals.
Yes, 100%.
That's a good analogy.
And I side with the Toucan Man.
Me too. I'm with you.
I'm a Toucan guy through and through. You take your marshmallows, your Chase the Rainbow kind of racist.
Get it out of here.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah,
get out of here. I actually do like Lucky Charms. Who doesn't? But no, compared to... What was the scam? Is Alphabets, because they were Lucky Charms without the marshmallows.
The marshmallows.
And that's where we were in the 90s, is our parents were like, this is healthy. It doesn't have marshmallows. And you went, Alphabets is a healthy cereal, part of a nutritious breakfast.
Plus it teaches you while you're eating it.
Yeah, exactly.
You learn your alphabet.
Number one. Yeah. Puffs. Number two, the OG killer. The top dog, yes, the godfather, Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops, okay.
Number three, now we're into the trickier.
I know what it is.
I already know what it is. But this is definitely on the Mount Rushmore, but you got to eat them quick. Golden Grahams.
Golden Grahams. Oh, really? A little off the board for me, but I love Golden Grahams.
They're pretty good.
If you can eat the whole bowl of Golden Grahams
in three minutes,
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you try to leave that, once that Golden Graham goes soggy, though,
it's
like McDonald's fries that go cold. It's just all of a sudden the product has gone from one of the world's greatest foods to,
so, like, why am I eating this?
Bottom tier, disgusting, cannot have this.
Good pull there.
Yeah. Cannot do it.
Good pull there.
Number four.
This is going to be controversial.
Oh, no.
This is going to be controversial.
I'm so excited.
So am I.
Life.
I'm thrilled.
Life!
Agree. Agree.
Let's go.
Agree.
Life.
That's
cereal.
Not controversial
Love
at all.
Life cereal is like the perfect blend of your parents and you compromise.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's called life. It's healthy.
I love how happy you guys, dude. Now I kind of feel like all my sports takes suck because you guys have never reacted this way.
We jumped to life all of a sudden.
Room lit up. These guys are literally pointing at me going like, this hype man.
It's a rally.
Is this how it feels to be?
To be fair, you told me not to react, not to distract you when you're doing a bit. Yeah. So I stay stone-faced, not to interrupt you.
Life cereal, for sure.
Yes.
Nailed it with the perfect compromise thing. Because, like, when I was in elementary school and high school, it was just agreed upon that my mom, when we were going to No Frills, she was picking up life.
I like
how
you're like, it was agreed upon. Oh, that
but, like, silently, you know what I mean?
I thought you were saying that it was agreed upon that we were not to ask for the sugary cereal. It's funny, man.
Compromise.
That was one of life's sweetest joys, was going to the grocery store and approaching your parents with trash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the, like, Roman emperor style thumbs up or thumbs down that you would get.
We had a rule in our house where, like, if we were going into a holiday, so, like, either Christmas or March break, or, like, anytime you were off school, we would get a box of sweet cereal.
Love it.
The problem was that I'm the younger brother.
Oh, yeah, you got
and
nothing.
So, so, like, I'd be like, hey, Tim, what do you think about this? Yeah. And he'd go, absolutely not. We're getting what I want.
See, I was the oldest brother. I was the oldest brother, so I never even considered this because I just ran the house.
Same.
I
it was
just
a nightmare.
I ran the prison. prison yard.
It's like, Tim, excuse me, what about Nesquik this time? Absolutely not.
Yeah. It's like, you'll take whatever I give you.
Yeah. By the way, lucky if I don't crush the whole box on the first day. So
honorable mention was the bubble cereal for me was Corn Pops.
I love Corn. That was on my list.
Love Corn Pops are pretty solid. Corn Pops are on my Mount Rushmore.
So, Austin, is there anything that we've left out here?
No, no, I think you guys circled the whole wagon pretty well. I'm having a hard time speaking today. I'm not sure what's going on with pronunciations. I apologize.
I mean,
you said it fine there. I don't know what's going on.
Cap'n Crunch, overrated, underrated, just properly rated?
Frosted Flakes, I mean, but I like sugary cereal. I'm a child boy.
Yeah, but,
like,
but Frosted Flakes was also...
This isn't good for me.
But Frosted Flakes was like also kind of a bit of a compromiser. It was like...
Really?
Yeah, because your parents would be like, hey, here's Frosted Flakes. This is a sugary cereal. And I'd be like, kind of.
Frosted Flakes was too sweet for me to be a compromise. But also, you remember the classic move? Like, I remember going to like my grandma's house and like she'd have Corn Flakes. And then it would be like, just dump a spoonful of sugar on your cereal.
Well, I used to Rice Krispies squares, exactly.
Those lunatics.
It's crazy that that was a thing.
Yeah.
Just like white sugar. Take a spoonful and just dump pour it all over your cereal.
Berries and white sugar.
Oh, my
just
God.
Dump it, dump it, dump it. And you could do it to no end. There'd be that little sugar bowl.
Yeah.
Sugar bowls are out.
Sugar bowls are way out. Do you?
I use it every morning for coffee.
Coffee makes sense.
I have a small little spoon in there. And
but you live at home with your parents. I'm saying, like, if you're a millennial... You know how millennials get blamed for killing all the industries?
Sugar bowl.
Yeah. And now you guys are getting a little bit of the heat, which is nice. We got blamed for killing all of
everything.
But you guys are getting blamed now, Gen Zs, for killing restaurants and experiences. And nah, we were doing that too.
Yeah, I know.
Don't worry.
Vape joke.
You know who gets the credit for that is, do you ever remember, like, have you ever seen an episode of Mad Men? Like, they all need just ever hack darts. Back to back. Everybody was a chain smoker. They were like, you'd go to the doctor and they would say, yeah, you got to smoke more cigs. You're not smoking enough.
Like 4 out of 5 doctors agree Winstons are the way to go.
These are the best cigs.
Yeah. 4 out of 5 doctors agree.
Sick.
No, your guys' thing is that you have no concept of history or anything because that, like, you say stuff like that. Anyway. you know what we
just
own?
Making a joke.
Yeah, lung disease. So,
and TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok. You guys have that. Where was I? I forget. I got wrapped
we were
up
at
in that.
Cereal. Yeah.
Cereal talk. That was good, though. That
no, sugar
has
bowls.
Been
sugar bowls are gone. Bowls. Like, no millennials definitely killed sugar bowls.
We do not have a sugar bowl
in our house. There's no millennials that are going to have sugar bowls in their place.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
I might be the only one.
You're not a millennial, and neither are your parents.
Oh, I'm not a millennial. I'm a Gen Z.
So it's all good.
Couple problems with that.
I like how Austin goes, I'm the one having trouble speaking today. And it's like, this guy's out here writing typos in the doc.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to get it in there really quickly.
Yeah.
San Diego.
So unnecessary.
It's irrational confidence, guy.
I love though, but and you the opposite though. It's like, hey, Mackie, do you have a cereal? No, I think you guys covered everything. I'm having trouble speaking today. Like,
I was
now
to say Frosted Flakes, and it was like Frosted, and then I couldn't say Vector earlier. I'm just really disappointed in myself.
Frosted Flakes, I don't even have near the top. Frosted Flakes to me they're fine in a pinch. They very much apply with the Golden Grahams rule, which is must eat quickly.
Cannot let them get soggy.
Yeah, must eat quickly. Sure. But yeah, Frosted Flakes, very mid.
What do you think about Cheerios?
Fine.
Honey Nut Cheerios is like such a standard. Like, you know what you're getting.
Cereal.
It's a good bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
You're fine. You can live
solid
with it.
Compromise cereal.
Yeah.
But ultimately, my favorite with Honey Nut Cheerios was that when they try to be like, if you eat these, you won't die of a heart attack.
Sick.
They ran that for like 5 years.
Perfect.
Hey, you want to live?
I was like, oh my God, I better start eating Honey Nut Cheerios.
Hey,
start getting it in you, bud.
Hey, slobs.
Better start housing Honey Nut Cheerios.
You know what kills men? Heart disease. You know what stops that?
Dead in its tracks.
Cheerios. Eat them. Clear your heart. Anyway, UFC.
UFC 292. Sugar Sean O'Malley. TKO over Aljamain Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
In the second round, what was your first reaction to it? Were you surprised?
Yes. Oh, here's my first reaction. Yes!
Yep.
Oh, it's over! It's over! The Aljo nightmare is over. I cannot remember a less likable UFC champion. The way he got the belt bothers me to this day.
Yeah.
And it wasn't... I'll never forget him faking that injury in there. It ruined Piotr Jan's career, which is fine. But faking the injury, and everyone's always like, how can you say he faked it? Because he went out and did shots, and then he did an interview where he was completely lucid 10 seconds later, was celebrating. It's not even... He did give Piotr Jan, he defended it, so credit to him, but he never should have had the belt in the first place. He was completely unapologetic about it. He was posting him doing shots that evening, going out and partying that evening, doing interviews completely lucid. We all saw that he clearly took advantage of a rule. Piotr Jan screwed up. That's always been the position, but yes, the way that he unapologetically carried himself after that and the way that he just carries himself in general, I've never been a fan of.
Yeah. After he was losing that fight,
he's always just felt like a phony to me. Like, Aljamain Sterling has always felt like a bit of a phony to me. False bravado. And the thing I couldn't help but think of was at the pre-fight media conference when he did the, who's this guy ever fought? I'm going to expose him. Yelling, I'm going to expose him. And how ruthlessly he lost. How just, this was not a cool back and forth fight. This was not a Aljo had his moments fight. It was just, hey, you got your ass kicked. You got knocked out.
Yeah.
He embarrassed you.
Sean picked his shot.
He picked it. He embarrassed you. And now it's at the point where if your Sugar went, like, you'll give him a rematch for sure. Aljo will be back. He'll get his rematch. He'll give it an opportunity. But that was such a decisive one that you went, yeah, maybe, you know, Cheeto won, Cheeto next.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an immediate rematch one.
Cheeto and Sean in December, possibly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's weird to see a champion get dethroned and then not immediately think rematch. Yeah.
He took 18 unanswered shots to the head the ground before they called it. Like, sure he was getting just pummeled.
Anyway, I think it's huge for the UFC, too, though, because they pivot from a guy nobody cared about to a guy that everybody cares about.
Yeah.
And I think Sugar's polarizing too. I'm not a huge fan. I think he's interesting. I think he's compelling. I think that he is a entertaining watch. I find same thing. His personality is all right. Like, he seems pretty cool, but not to the point where he's not, I think people want him to be like a Conor McGregor type or whatever. He's not that. He's kind of cool, chilled out guy.
Yeah.
Little confident, cool look. Yeah, I'm into Sugar. I think it's a big win for the UFC that they finally have somebody that is a champion where you go, oh, you can tell somebody he's fighting tonight, or maybe a fight from now, especially. Yo, Sugar Sean, like, he's fighting. Yeah. Sugar O'Malley's fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
That people will go, oh, I'm tuning into that. Because right now, the UFC is just paper thin on that.
Yeah.
Because even, I've said this before, Volk to me is the number one. And Makhachev is very interesting to me too. But those are, they don't resonate with the public.
Yeah.
Volkanovski does not hit with the average UFC fan the way that he does with the diehards who love him. He is incredible. It took me a little while to get into him because he was beating Max, and Max is my guy.
Right.
But now I'm just a huge Volk dude. He's my number one favorite guy. If he's on a card, I'm definitely watching it. I'm clearing my schedule, making sure I'm watching Volkanovski.
Yeah.
But for the casuals, and I say that in a way that's not meant to be as disrespectful to, because in a lot of ways, like, I'm a casual too. Like, I think that the UFC hardcores would call me a casual.
Right.
It's annoying. It's an annoying term. But I'm saying that to the person who just wants to see a UFC fight and will tune in for a big name, who does get attracted by a star for a fight on Saturday night, Simon's pointing that's to himself. Me. I think that O'Malley is kind of the guy that you can hope draws people back in.
It was especially evident right after the fight, too, when, like, the UFC themselves were posting the highlight of the actual knockout. Yeah. They never do that.
Yeah.
And they don't allow anybody else to post it either. That's right. It was everywhere.
Yeah.
They were like, this is our guy. Yeah. This is the face of the UFC forward.
I think it's still, so it's weird. The UFC is just in a weird moment with star power. John Jones is still obviously their number one, right? Yes. John Jones, because he's got the pedigree, the name, he's done it for forever and ever and ever. He's a compelling figure. Everybody knows who he is. They hear that John Jones is fighting, and now that he's a champion, it's a big deal. So, and he's heavyweight. That's
polarizing.
It's number one. It's not even a question. He's clearly the guy. Two is still Izzy. Three, though, I think you could make the case that the number three draw now is going to be Sugar.
Yeah. After this weekend, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, it's not Makhachev. I just talked about Volk. I don't think it's obviously not Aljo.
It's not Edwards.
It's not Usman. It's not Edwards. Mm-hmm. It's not Pereira. Yeah, it's not Pantoja.
I'm Brandon trying to think
of other guys.
I do like Brandon Moreno,
Yeah. No, who else is it? It's not Gaethje, I think, actually would be up there. I think Gaethje would be top five.
Poirier is up there. He's not above those two, but he's up there.
No, there's like, now you're getting into the classic guys where you're like,
Jones, Izzy, Sugar.
No, that's it.
Top three.
And then obviously Conor McGregor. Yeah. All of a sudden McDavid. Conor McDavid would be a big draw.
I would watch that. As a casual, I would tune in.
No, but
that.
Conor McGregor, but he's non-existent until he actually steps in. So
what about Chandler?
No, he's not. He's not in the top.
Well, I'm not saying he's in the top three.
Okay, let's put it this way: if Michael Chandler was fighting Beneil Dariush, you wouldn't be like a non UFC fan would never be like, oh my God, true. Michael Chandler.
I guess Chandler would be for like the MMA hardos who love the MMA stuff.
But Michael
like
Chandler's entire thing is that he's gotten his ass beat by everybody that matters.
Like it's entertaining fights,
yeah, sure, of course, but he's lost, and he's had moments where we thought he was going to beat Oliveira. We had moments where we thought he was going to beat Poirier, but
he always has those moments.
That's what I mean.
But he'll clip the guy, wobble, and then he'll end up losing.
No, but he's a lesser version of what Gaethje is. So absolutely not. Anyway, I loved it. I think it's big for the UFC. I think I always like star power. I've made this abundantly clear. Mm-hmm. I know, again, it's a casual take to say that the UFC needs stars, but it is nice having someone who looks different with O'Malley, where it's like he's got the hair, he's got the tattoos, he's got the length. He's just a lanky, weird-looking guy in that division.
And he can strike.
Yeah, he's got a good, compelling style to watch. Yeah, this is a win. This is a huge, huge, huge win for a organization right now that feels like they have guys who are either basically on their way out that are names. Like, we're all waiting to see who Jake Paul's next boxing opponent is, right? Like, the Diazes of the world, right? There's some of the guys that you just mentioned, the Poiriers. It's just like these guys are on the way out. They haven't been able to develop a lot of young star power. This guy is clearly one of the next hopefuls. And this is what they've wanted all along. That's why when Aljo goes, how is this guy fought? There was merit to that because he went, this guy hasn't fought a lot of people because he has been to a degree rushed so that they could have him in a position like this. Mm-hmm. The only thing I will say that is kind of interesting also about Aljo's position. It's like, who has he fought? It's like, Aljo, the only reason that you have any cred is because you're the second fight against Piotr Jan, who he beat. It's like,
And he fought TJ Dillashaw with one arm.
Yeah, it's just a huge loss. Anyway, exactly.
And triple C of a three-year absence.
The TJ one. The triple C one, though, is actually pretty legit.
It's legit.
No, that was a good one. The triple C one, I don't care how long he's off. That one he deserves a lot of credit for. I actually forgot about that. That one's very, very
legit.
That was
the last one before this one.
Yeah, I know. And I forgot. But no, and because I'm just like not an Aljo guy.
True.
I'm like, I didn't even think about that. That one's very, very legit. Anyway.
The TJ one. I remember I was talking about that on the show after and how he had one arm.
Yeah, I could just never. Aljo could have been one of the greatest champions ever, the way that he won and the way that he comported himself. It's one of those things where I would never be able to let that go as a fan of mixed martial arts and the competition.
Gotcha.
It would have never hit with me. He would have had to win forever. I would have given him his flowers. Like, I would have given him his due and gone, he's gotten rid of a lot of that, but it would have just always bothered me. I never would have liked it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's next? Let's do one more quick thing.
A story floating around over the weekend. Elon Musk wants to remove the blocking feature from Twitter or X. I don't even know what I call it anymore. Do I call it X or Twitter?
You call it Twitter. You call it Twitter.
Okay, Twitter. Because every article calls it X, and I just trips me out for a second.
Let's not do that. I already did a whole bit on the show of we need to not
call it X. So he tweeted out block is going to be deleted as a feature except for DMs, and saying it makes no sense. So
it makes sense.
In the article, they were suggesting there's a software engineer from Twitter, Akil Mikdad, who was suggesting that it would play out more like a super mute feature, someone wouldn't be able to reply or quote your tweets, but they could still see it. Do you agree or disagree with the decision to remove blocking?
If they can't quote tweet you or
reply to you.
So I rarely block. The only time I really ever block is, like, I had this one Maple Leaf account that just kept trying. Sometimes people try to use you as, like misquote you or misrepresent you as a way of being like, look, this is the thing that I don't like.
Proving their own agenda.
And there would be like a couple accounts that try to do that over and over again. And if they're just like waiting to interact with your stuff and try to get like a cheap pop off of your back and they don't actually, because I don't mind if someone wants to have some actual discourse on Twitter, but if you're just out there trying to be like, you're this and this makes me so mad, it's about sports. I'm pretty quick to mute. The only time I'll block is if it's an account usually where it's just either hateful stuff.
Of course.
Where I don't ever want them to see my tweets. I don't ever want to interact because it does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Repeat offenders where it's just like, I've seen this name over and over and over. Or, like, again, usually I'll just mute, but then sometimes you'll start to get, like, notifications off of something else, and you're like, wait, what's happening here? And then you realize that this is the thing. That, anyway, right. I hate that stuff. So I use, actually, and I, by the way, out of the gate before mute, I bet you I have a bunch of blocked accounts because probably early I blocked. But I would say in the last maybe 5-6 years, I got to have single digits blocks. Mm. Like I said, I can remember exactly the last person I blocked, and it was some Leaf Lame blog account thing, right. Where it's the guy who had the worst takes of all time, who just is a weirdo. It's,
I think I know who you're talking about, but I'm not going to say it.
But, and then, like I said, there's just some people that are, the internet's a strange place, bro. It's just better sometimes to remove yourself from it. Yeah. And so that's why the block. So if it's a heavily muted function or whatever, where people can't quote tweet you and they can't interact at all with your tweet, I agree with it.
They can still see it.
I think is fine. Okay. The only thing about seeing it, though, is that they're just going to take a screenshot of it and post the tweet.
Yeah. Post the tweet and be like, look what this guy's saying, and then just continue their agenda.
And then you don't even see any of it. Anyway, it just, mostly what I think of with this, where Eli is, it doesn't make sense. Like, shut up. Okay, whatever. But Eli is done.
Eli Apple, new head
Elon
of Twitter,
has done a very good job of just constantly keeping. This is the thing people I feel overlook a little bit. Is we're still using it, and he still keeps as much as they're his numbers, showing that people are on Twitter. I'm not seeing people leave Twitter. I haven't gone back to Threads. I posted on Threads the first night I was
there.
Where
can we find you on Blue Sky?
Yeah, no. That's what I mean. It's MySpace. We're going to keep Twitter until the wheels fall off. And as much as the people that are out there that are like, I would never, I've already gone over this. It's the strangest thing ever that people look at Facebook or Zuckerberg or Meta, as we now refer. Like, why are they called Meta? Is because the name Facebook had become so dragged, so horrific with privacy, with data, with misinformation.
Yeah.
Look at even the stories that's happening with Meta right now and Canadian news, right? Like, it's not good. It's not good, everybody. And yet people are like, this is the virtuous. It's just shut up. Just shut up. Just shut up.
I have a thing with, like, I'm so confused. So Elon will text something about whatever change he wants to make, and all these people,
everyone runs with it.
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing. Like, he's succeeding in that. All these people are like, wow, look at this idiot doing it. Like, the people who are so against him are like, dude, look at this idiot. And then just getting so much more word of mouth and traction to the point that, like, you know,
dude, he's new Trump.
We're friggin' talking about it now. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's the same stuff. Like, holy, you're just going to log on anyway. We're all so online we're all going to log on anyway.
You're still using the app.
I was going to say, you ever go out in public?
Jeez.
You know what you see? People on their phones.
Where I draw the line is, like, well, those reports where it's like when X branches out into, like, the weird, like, financial stuff they want to do, apparently, reportedly, allegedly, where it's like, oh, man, to verify yourself, you're going to have to, like, submit, like, photo ID and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We got to stop giving people a lot of data. I know. That's the big thing.
Well, but you already are.
Oh, 100%. Well, I mean, for the generations past us, you and me who, like, early days of the internet probably gave our parents addresses email addresses for, like, garbage stuff.
Well, I was going to say, do you remember?
This is for the next generation.
Do you remember finding out, like, wait, the Facebook people can find your Facebook pictures?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, wait, those don't go away when I delete them and someone found me drunk at a kegger? Yeah. You're like, that's bad.
Yeah. We were like the test subject generation. Like, for everybody else, be smarter about where you're giving your data.
Yeah, but it's not, unfortunately, I'm kind of defeatist about it, especially with, the way that large language models are just, like, ripping everything from the internet. It's only going to get worse. But who cares? Who cares? My only point here is that Elon is... he's a genius. You can't refute that. And all of this stuff, as much as it infuriates people, it's Trump. People can't stop clicking on it where they go, oh, I'm mad at Elon article. Like, I'll click it. And you just keep kind of creating. It gets louder and louder and louder. If you really gave a crap, you'd still just use Twitter because it's not affecting. Like, you really think that you guys are going to abandon Twitter and affect his wealth in a material way? Like, no, shut up. well, if we boycott it and we give more money to Zuckerberg, that's what I mean. So that stuff pisses me off. But if you just shut up about it and you stop clicking on all the articles and interacting with all the Elon stuff, guess what? He probably stopped doing more is screwing out the Twitter.
Exactly.
But the reason he keeps doing it is because everyone's so fascinated. They can't stop going more and more and more and more.
And like the fake outrage. Anyway, JD.Bunkus at Blue Sky. Yeah. Find him over there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where he'll
be. Best bets over there on Blue Sky.
He'll be giving all his thoughts.
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing. Be doing all those cool guy stuff like that. Anyway, all right, let's get out of here. I'm not going to talk about any of that. Here's what I can tell you, Joe, by the way. When you're putting stuff into the rundown right now, just leave Damian Lillard stuff out of it.
Yeah,
James Harden and Damian Lillard, unless there's a break, in the case, leave it out.
There's a small little anecdote. Yeah, exactly. Unfold the Blazers. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm good. Yeah. Anyway, subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. If you want to play Botano, hit me up. In the old DMs at JD Bunkus, Instagram, Twitter, whichever. And then we'll be back tomorrow.